Welcome to Public Policy This Week, a well-rounded weekly discussion of policy issues that frame today's American experience.
Good morning. It is Friday, April 14th, and you've joined us for Public Policy This Week here on KYMN Radio.
Public Policy This Week is dedicated to an honest and open discussion of public policy issues. Each week, we take a look at a specific policy subject. We have guests on the show who are experts in their fields. I'm Steve Swigum, one of your co-hosts for this morning's show. And the gentlemen sitting next to me are my other two co-hosts today, Rich Larson and Joe Morhacek.
Today we're going to step away from public policy and talk about Major League Baseball. The Twins are in New York for a series against the Yankees, so we're not headed to Target Field for a mobile broadcast. But we have the next best thing. One of the great voices in baseball comes to us. If you're like me, a baseball broadcast is best on the radio. It takes me back to my childhood, my late father working in the yard or garage with the game on in the background, or friends gathered around the radio snapping gloves as we listened to the late inning call of a game after we played sandlot ball ourselves. The great radio announcers bring the beauty and tension of the game to life, inspiring the imagination of what it feels like to be at the game.
So we are going to have a short visit to start off the show today, a short visit with the radio voice of the Twins, Mr. Corey Provis. A native of Highland Park, Illinois, Corey attended college at Syracuse University, studying at the S.I. Newhouse School of Public Communications. While at Syracuse, he did play-by-play and studio hosting for the Syracuse Orange Sports. During that time, he also called baseball games for the minor league Auburn Double Days of the New York Penn League. After graduating from Syracuse in 2000, Corey called collegiate football, basketball, and baseball games for the Virginia Tech Hokies, the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets, and the Alabama Birmingham Blazers, and then the Wake Forest Demon Deacons. He then moved on to Major League Baseball, first as a pregame host for the Chicago Cubs, where he backed up the legendary Pat Hughes, and then with the Milwaukee Brewers, where he worked alongside the even more legendary Bob Uecker. The Twins hired Corey after the 2011 season, and he is now in his 12th season as the voice of the Minnesota Twins, where he has become a fan favorite with his broadcast partner, Dan Gladden. Corey still calls college football games on the Big Ten Network and college basketball games on Fox. For my money, folks, Corey is absolutely one of the best play-by-play guys in baseball, and we are very fortunate to have him calling our hometown team, right where you can hear right here on KYMN because we are a Twins affiliate. Corey Provis, welcome to Public Policy This Week.
Hi, guys. Good morning. Thank you for that very kind introduction. I appreciate it.
Well, we really appreciate you taking some time while you're sitting in a hotel room in the Big Apple. You could be doing just about anything right now, but you're taking the time to talk to us. We appreciate that.
That's my pleasure. Happy to do it.
All right. Okay. We've got some questions we want to ask you about the state of the game as the season gets underway. But first, I have to ask you if you've ever seen anything like the top of the first inning last night. For those who don't know, the Twins scored 9 runs in the first inning, 7 off of Yankee starter Johnny Brito, who was pulled after 2/3 of an inning. And then they added 2 more runs off reliever Colton Brewer. They wound up winning the game 11-2. Corey Provis, where on earth did that offensive explosion come from?
Well, the last time that the Twins chased a starter for the Yankees in the Bronx after 2/3 of an inning was the 2017 wildcard game.
Yes.
When Brian hit a leadoff home run off Luis Severino, and then 2 or 3 batters later, Eddie Rosario homered to right, and Severino was out of the game before the first inning even ended. Sadly, you know, Irvin Santana gave it right back, and the Twins lost that game, that one game, winner-take-all wild card game in 17.
Yes.
But I, you know, the joy, I can almost hear the excitement in Manhattan coming from Twins territory last night because of how rare that is to do that, period, but to do it at Yankee Stadium. And Chris Atterbury, my colleague on radio, he had a great point before the game last night that last night marked the first time the Twins won a series opening game at Yankee Stadium in almost 9 years.
Yeah.
So it has been well documented. The Twins don't play the Yankees well, regular season, postseason. So any win you can get over that team is enjoyable.
Yeah. Corey, you were a little excited yesterday when we went back to back to back.
Well, yeah. I mean, sports are fun. That's what I always go back to. And a guy that I work with over the Big Ten Network, that's what he preaches. And I never forget about that. That this is fun. And part of what we do, on the air is hopefully an escape for people who have troubles, whether it be in their own home, with their own lives, professionally, what have you. And if they just need 2.5 hours, 3 hours to escape from that and be entertained, I feel like that's part of our job. Yeah. So I'm excited because it's sports, because sports are fun. And the Twins are off to a great start. What's not to be excited about?
Watching Joe Ryan step on the mound last night, the one thing I could think of was Jack Morris. Before every start he ever made, he'd tell his team, "I've never blown a 10-run lead, guys."
Danny talks about that all the time too. He's like, "You know, guys, I've never lost with 7."
Yeah, well, there
and
it is.
He gives up. And he gives up 7. You know, guys, I've never lost with 8. So, Danny tells that story too with Jack. And we were talking about Jack last night because the Tampa Bay Rays are off to a 13-0 start, and that ties for the best record to start a season in the modern era. And the only thing better than that was the Jack Morris led St. Louis Maroons in 1884. and that team got off to a 20-0 start, and we're talking about a three-man rotation in 1884, and Jack was a key cog in that slim rotation for the Maroons back in the 1880s.
Yeah, the pride of Highland Park, which of course was a suburb of Pig's Eye, Minnesota back
yep.
then. Yeah. So talking about pitching, though, I mean Joe he threw a heck of a game last night, and really, I mean, Corey, the strength of the team this year is pitching, isn't it?
Yeah, and how about that? I mean, when's the last time we said that? We're talking about what's been just a yearly struggle to just build a winning team based on pitching, and that is by far the number one headline as to why this team is off to a 9-4 start. The offense has been inconsistent, came up big early last night, but the starting pitching has been remarkable. And here we are 13 games into the season, and the Twins are getting more length from their starting staff than any team in baseball. And they finished 28th out of 30 teams in that category last year. So, Rocco Baldelli said at the outset of camp, he wants these guys to pitch deeper into games. And so far, they're doing that. I think, obviously, the bulk of the reason is performance, but also maybe organizationally. Looking at it a little bit differently, not pulling the plug as early as maybe we saw in the past with certain guys.
Yep.
So Rock was giving these guys a longer leash, and the team is benefiting for it.
Indeed.
Corey, baseball's been around in some form in America since the 1700s, formalized in the mid-1800s, and a great part of the love for the game is its history and traditions. This season introduces some big changes to the game. A pitch timer, limits on defensive shifts and bigger bases. For our audience, can you comment on the changes to baseball? And is this good for the game? Early indications are that fans certainly like it.
Sure, it's a good question. My understanding is that this is going over overwhelmingly well.
Yeah.
That this has been a slam dunk. I'm not saying that everybody, that if you poll 100 people, that 100 people love what they're seeing. But there's no doubt in my mind that the majority of the people are enjoying the changes to the game. The players put the game in this position with a lack of action, with a lack of just working in a more efficient, timely manner. And the game had to step up. Otherwise, they were going to keep dwindling in the ratings, attendance, television, radio, sponsorship sales, you name it, was going to keep plummeting. So were they aggressive changes? Yes. Were they well thought out? Yes, these were in the minor leagues the last couple of years, and Major League Baseball did a pretty thorough study with thousands of fans, different demographics all across the country, and the number one complaint was we want more action. These things take too long. We want to see more stolen bases. We want to see more balls in play.
Yes.
And so far we're seeing that. I mean, last night, it was an 11-2 final. even with that game, if the same score last year, there's no doubt, and that game was 2 hours and 20 minutes last night with an 11-2 final. I think if you have that same game, you played out the same way a year ago, that's still over 3 hours.
Yeah.
I think that's over 3 hours last night because of how quickly it was going in the first inning. All the time would have been called, slow this down, meeting after meeting. It was moving last night, even with all that offense early.
Yeah, I have to say, I'm the fan that would normally just get enraged when they would change anything in the game at all. And I have always bought into the great romantic notion that baseball does not have a clock. I have to tell you, 2 weeks into the season, the pitching clock has not bothered me one little bit.
And I think, and I'm not sure if you've been to Target Field yet to see it. It's one thing to watch it on television, but for your audience out there, you know, go to a game. You will be mesmerized just being there in person. It was for me. I was watching a game or two when I was still back in the cities during spring training, wrapping up my BTN basketball schedule, and I saw that it was moving fast on television. But once I got down to Fort Myers and saw it firsthand, I was floored with how quickly the game is moving. So if you're still against it, I'm not going to criticize you, but go to a game.
Right.
Go to a game and see it, and just I wonder if you feel differently after doing that.
Is Byron Buxton a 30-30 player this year? 30 home runs and 30 steals. And if Buxton and Carlos Correa can stay healthy for 162 games, where do you see this club in the standings this September?
I don't think Byron will ever be a 30-30 guy because he's not at first base too often. You know, if you look at his career, he doesn't hit for average because he doesn't hit for singles.
That's a good point.
Walk. So that's why his on-base percentage is never on the higher side. He hits home runs, he hits doubles, he hits triples.
Yeah.
When he does try to steal a base, he's incredibly successful. But, you know, Byron, even when he's been healthy, we're not talking about, you know, 25 stolen bases a year for that guy. So I don't think we'll ever see 30-30, but Byron Buxton is an incredible player. He's one of the game's bright talents. And he wasn't buying into this plan about being the primary DH because the guy wants to be in center. He was hearing about this plan from his coaching staff, from the training staff, from the front office. But it wasn't until early March when Carlos Correa invited him over to his house in spring training and had a four-hour dinner with Byron. And basically the point of that dinner was, we need you to be our DH because we need you to play. And I don't know how long this plan is going to be. I hope Byron's back in center here in the near future. But what I do know is that if Byron DHing means he can play, you know, 5 out of 7 or 6 out of 7 or 4 out of 5, whatever the ratio is, the Twins are going to be a much better team for it.
For sure. And that's not saying he's not a great center fielder, Corey. He is an awesome center.
Oh, he's one of the best in the game. He's a Platinum Glove winner. He's incredible. But the Michael A. Taylor trade makes so much sense. I think that they had a plan. I think the front office had a plan about this in the offseason, and not just putting a guy in center, you know, to kind of stop the bleeding, but go get an accomplished center fielder. And Michael A. Taylor won a Gold Glove 2 years ago.
And Taylor is good, but if I was on the mound and I look back and having Buxton in center field, I'd feel pretty comfortable, pretty good with him.
No question.
Corey, Major League Baseball this year has made a significant change in its scheduling. We've gone from that so-called on-balance schedule where we would get to see the Tigers and the Indians 50, 60 times a year, whatever it was, to a more balanced schedule where we actually will get to see the Padres, and we'll get to see the Dodgers, and we'll get to see, you know, every team, I think, this year in Major League Baseball. Positive change, you think, or not positive? You like the idea of the balanced schedule?
Yeah, I think it's a wonderful idea. I mean, 19 games against the Guardians, the White Sox, the Royals, and the Tigers was boring. Because there were times throughout the season where you'd have a stretch where you'd play 8 out of 11 against the same team. And it's not fun. That's not fun for anybody. It's really hard on relievers because relievers only have so many pitches. They're going to see these same guys in a short amount of time. It's going to make it, you know, pretty challenging. But I think for the fans, we want to see everybody. The fact that at least every other year, Atlanta is going to come to town. So that means that Ronald Acuna Jr., and Ozzie Albies are going to be at Target Field, or the Padres are going to be at Target Field every other year to see Manny Machado and Juan Soto and that great team. That, to me, is fantastic. Conversely, in the summer months, if you're a family and you want to get away and see the Twins on the road, every other year you can pack up the family, you know, make it a long road trip, head out to Dodger Stadium, maybe a place you've never been before. So I love the idea. The one wrinkle that I'm concerned about, and I have not heard an answer on this yet, is that I'm just going to give you a hypothetical because it doesn't matter. The Twins play the Rockies the last three games of the year. But let's say that the Twins and the Rockies were starting a series in Colorado on Monday. And the weather forecast looked good Monday, okay Tuesday, Wednesday looked like a problem. I just hope that there's enough thinking going on that they're a little bit proactive on the front end to either play a doubleheader or move start times around, because what's going to happen is off days are going to disappear quickly, and you're going to have stretches where you're going to be playing, you know, 32 games in 29 days, because you have to make up a game here and make up a game here and maybe fly cross country. So I just hope there's some thinking on the front end of these series, especially places you only go one time, as opposed to a divisional series. Maybe you can make it up with the White Sox or Royals when you go back. But I hope on the front end that if they see that the forecast isn't looking good for a certain day, that you're proactive and either remove the start time or try to get two in one day.
Corey, do you think, you know, this is just pure speculation, but with the way the schedule has now been set up and the way the rules are, and there's a designated hitter now in the National League, do you think baseball is setting things up to completely restructure the divisions, or maybe even just get away from divisions and possibly even the American League and National League and divide things up a little more regionally, a little more differently?
I think realignment will happen, but not until, you know, baseball figures out what's happening with Tampa Bay and Oakland.
Yeah.
You know, once their franchises have some clarity as to if they're staying in those markets, if so, where are they playing? New stadium, new ballparks. So until that gets resolved, and it's been an ongoing process, there seems to be a finish line for Tampa Bay. If I read correctly in spring training, the owner of the Rays said that they're basically giving, you know, I think the mayor of St. Petersburg and maybe even the mayor of Tampa to kind of come to a resolution by the end of the year. And if that doesn't happen, then I think their lease is up, I believe, at Tropicana Field at the end of 2027. That they'll probably start to think about where their next home is going to be. I'd be shocked at this point if Oakland stays there. It's too bad because, you know, Oakland's fans are awesome. And I don't blame the fans one bit for not going to even cheer on that team, because that owner has given that fan base no chance to be a competitive team. It's an embarrassing payroll that they have. Yep. The stadium is terrible. We all know what the Coliseum is. It's just run down and awful. But their fans are great when their ownership gives them a chance to be competitive. So I think realignment will happen, but not until, you know, Major League Baseball resolves what the future is for the A's and the Rays.
And, you know, Las Vegas is ready to build the A's a ballpark right on the strip. And a pretty nice ballpark too. And you know what's going to be fascinating for me with the Rays, I mean, the Rays are off to this, well, if they win today, it's an historic start for sure. If they're the class of baseball this year, if they win the, like, how is that going to affect attendance for that god awful ballpark in Tampa, where you even can't even get to it? Is it going to help Tampa at all?
Yesterday they had 21,000 there for their game.
Okay.
Yesterday, which was awesome for them. That's a really good turnout for Tampa Bay. You know, they've had good teams in the past, and they just don't come out. I can't tell you how often the Twins have gone down there at various points in the year, and then the Rays have either been in first place, second place, and there's still, you know, 4,000 people there at that game. Florida's a tough sell for baseball. The Twins were just in Miami to play the Marlins. You know, that ballpark was built with public, you know, financing, and nobody goes. The crowds they have for the WBC were incredible. But Florida baseball is a tough sell. It's a very transient state. You know, people move down there for the weather. They're from other areas. So they diehard Marlin fans, they diehard Rays fans. Not saying they don't have their pocket of passionate fans, but that, I think, is a big part of why it's a pretty tough sell to sell baseball day in, day out in the state of Florida.
Corey, baseball, more than any other sport, seems to be about personalities. There's personalities that we talk about all day or all night or having a beer or out for lunch. It could be Mickey. It could be Willie. It could be Kirby or it could be Herbie. But it's about personalities, not only on the field, but also in the broadcasting booth. You've worked with a couple of really unique, ideal personalities. Can you give us your best Bob Uecker story?
I mean, I have so many, and there's some that I can never share because I'll lose my favorite. But you know, among my favorites, and so Pat Hughes worked with Bob Uecker for 12 years, from 1984 to 1996, before Pat moved to Chicago to call the Cubs games, and Pat's going into the Hall of Fame this summer, which is incredible. And so when I got the job in Milwaukee, and I just had left Pat and Ron Santo for 2 years with the Cubs, and I was asking Pat about Bob, about how do I know when it's going well, that he enjoys my company and our relationship is off to a good start. And he said, oh, you'll know. I said, how? He said, the second that you're live on the air and he makes you laugh uncontrollably and you have to keep going. And a few months into my first season with Bob's, this was 2009, that happened. The Brewers are playing a series in Cincinnati. And there's some kind of event happening on the field pregame. There's all this great music and dancing and these vibrant colors. And it was very festive. And there was this one performer that this woman had, this towering, imagine Marge Simpson. But instead of the blue hair, it was like every piece of produce imaginable, right? It was like a 2 foot tower, 3 foot tower of produce, right, on her head. And I don't know how she did it. It was incredible talent. She was dancing and singing. And so she sang the national anthem this particular day. And so when we were on the road, when we were at home, the way that Bob wanted the format, the national anthem would be sung while we're in commercial break. But when we're on the road, we don't have that same flexibility with the timing. So there'd be times you'd carry all of it, some of it, the last few bars. So this particular day in Cincinnati, so how it would go too in our format, if we took it out of the anthem, Bob would take it out, give the performer's name, and then throw it to me for the starting lineups. And then after the starting lineups, I had a few sponsor things I had to get through, and then I would go to break one more time. So this particular day in Cincinnati, we carry the last few bars of the national anthem, and this lady is singing and doing a fine job. So every previous time, we'd hear the last few notes, and Bob would say the person's name and throw it to me. But for some particular reason, as the anthem ended, he pauses and he says, "The Chiquita Banana with our anthem, the lineups. Here's Corey." And I just could not keep it together. I just had the hardest. I was not expecting that one bit. And I'm trying to get through it. I'm having the darndest time getting through it. And he's lying. He keeps his mic on. He's like, "You okay? You all right? What's wrong?" And just so that's one of my favorites, because it's probably the earlier memories with Bob. But another one we had that was really funny. So Bob is the greatest pitch man in history. And so Usinger Sausage is a big sponsor with the Brewers, and Bob has his own brat you can get at a local store, and all the proceeds benefit the Make-A-Wish Foundation, his Mr. Baseball brat. So he's reading a card about Usinger's, and what Bob is so good, he has the card, but he never uses it. He just kind of ad-libs on his own. And so he's talking about, you know, this Usinger sausage and the pretzel bun and the crisp kraut. Mm-hmm, it's tasty. It's the heart of Wisconsin, Mr. Baseball brought from Usinger's. And so we get back to the game. He said, "You know, Cor, you know, the best thing about the Usinger's brought is that you don't even need a grill to cook it." I said, "Really, Bob?" Yeah, it's like, "No, sometimes you just pop that thing in your cigarette lighter, take a bite, and you'll be fine." like a month later, we get a letter in the booth from Dan that is upset that his car is in the shop because put a cold brat in his sick lighter, and there's some damage, and he wants Bob and I to pay for it.
Oh, so, that's hilarious.
Those kind of things, you know, pop up, and, you know, I probably, Danny and Kyle in the booth are probably tired, but I do it I do it like my Bob impression every day. I'm like, if the Twins lose, you know, and not in the air, but I'll be like, all right, we'll try again tomorrow, folks. And just things like that. I just that I enjoy doing. And every once in a while, too, if the right situation was there, I throw out a major league line, you know.
Sure. Just like, a bit outside.
We'd be in the commercial, and I'd be like, you know, Bob, we just got one hit. We only got one. You can't saw. Nobody's listening. So we would have that. We would have that back and forth a little bit.
Corey, you've been a joy to have. I know you have a meeting to go there in the Big Apple right now, and you're going to get us another. Well, we don't play today, do we? We play tomorrow.
Yeah, we play
today. Give us a little bit of your crystal ball here as we finish up with you. Crystal ball for the season. Can we win the Central American League pennant? Do you see a 1987, 1981 happening again? 1991,
I'd love to. I learned a long time ago, I can't predict wins. I don't know how people do it. I can't tell if they're going to win 85 games, 95 games. I have no idea. It depends on health. If these guys stay healthy, they have a great chance to be in the playoffs. There's no reason why they can't win this division. They have this starting staff has been incredible, and they're going to have injuries. But, you know, Louis Varland and Bailey Ober and Simeon Woods Richardson, they're in St. Paul. I feel like they have better depth to fill in with the pitching than maybe they've had in the past. So I feel really good about that. I'm not as confident in bullpen depth beyond what they have. If they suffer some injuries in the bullpen, which is inevitable, you know, beyond, you know, the guys at AAA, I think that might be an area of concern right now that I have. But position player wise, seeing Eddie Julian come up is impressive.
We're gonna great Royce first Lewis game. Again. Great first game for him.
We're going to see Royce Lewis again this season, which is awesome. He looks really strong coming back from his second knee injury. And we'll see some other guys as well. Maybe Brooks Lee makes a cameo at some point this year as well, former first round pick. So I like the team, but it just boils down to staying healthy and letting these guys compete throughout the 6 month season.
You mentioned Royce Lewis. Is he scheduled to be ready by All-Star break game?
Maybe. I mean, he's going to be cleared to start playing in some games here any day now. Mid-April was the time frame when Royce was going to be cleared to start playing in minor league games and rehabbing games. So it's going to be a path to get him back, and then we'll see where he plays. I'm sure he's going to play mostly at short, but with Correa, they're going to play him some at third, some at second, move him around a little bit there just for the time being. But he looks strong. He looks really good just from watching him in spring training. He's a positive kid. And if anybody can come back from back-to-back ACL tears, he's the guy that can do it.
All right. Corey Provis, we can't thank you enough for taking a little time and talking with us today. I hope you enjoy that meeting in New York City, sir, and you bring us home a win tonight.
All right, guys. I enjoyed it. Thanks for having me on your show.
Thank
you, Corey.
All right, take care, guys.
Thanks, Corey.
And that is Corey Provis, the voice of the Minnesota Twins, who can be heard right here on KYMN Radio every Twins game. But there'll be one tonight at 6:05.
Rich. Oh, go ahead, Joe.
No, I was going to say, guys, you know I grew up in Southeast Wisconsin, worked there. I knew Corey back. I didn't know Corey, but I listened to Corey back in his days when he first was with the Cubs and then later the Brewers.
Right.
Pat Hughes, he talked a little bit about Pat Hughes and Ron Santo. Wonderful radio team. And it was at that time in Corey's career that he would open up for the Cubs broadcast and then finish the broadcast. Then he'd sub a little bit before he got his first big break with the Brewers. But you could tell back then he was going to be a wonderful baseball announcer. And he's really good.
He is very good to listen to. You know, when you're out there and doing the yard work or the field work, baling hay, or just to have the game on in the background. You don't even have to be paying attention. Right. It's a comfort. It's a comfort in your life.
Steve, I don't watch baseball on TV. I listen to it. That's my preferred way of – I love the imagination part of it.
And that's why we love you here, Joe Marobczyk.
No, I'm telling you, man, I much prefer to listen to a game, and that's the way I spend summers, with that radio on in the background.
I will tell you, you know, I worked in the Twins ticket office for 14 years, and I got to, during those 14 years, I actually got to watch very little baseball because I was always at the ballpark, or I was driving home from the ballpark. when you're at the ballpark, they pipe the radio broadcast in, and then driving home. Far and away, I prefer listening to baseball on the radio than watching it on TV. There's nothing as good as actually going to the ballpark.
Yes.
So Rich, since Corey had to leave us early to go to the meeting up there, and we understand that, we appreciate having him for a half hour. I had this idea that amongst the three of us, and maybe amongst your listening audience as well here at Kim Radio, we'd do a little game here. I thought we'd talk about the, first of all, the all-time Twins positions, all-time Twins team.
Okay.
Whether we could agree on that. We can agree on Puckett in center field.
actually, I would put him in right. But that's we'll talk about this. Well,
you're trying to get another player in there somehow.
You guys know I'm a Brewers fan, right?
We know that.
Okay. you can give us your all Brewers team. That's
I can give you the 82 team right now. I'm sure you could.
See, Brewers, Wisconsin?
Yes, sir.
Rich, we can speak slower if we need to.
Okay, all right, put a beer stein in front of him so he can actually relate a little bit better. Yeah.
So after the, here's what we're going to do with the audience so the Kim listeners can know what's coming forward. We're going to do the all-time Twins team. Then I'm going to ask you for your two favorite Twins moments in life, in history. Just two. And then maybe I have a couple of trivia questions for you at the end of that.
Okay. So, are you going to answer your own questions too?
Sure.
Good.
Sure.
Good. Good.
Okay. So let's start with the all-time Twins team, and you're not going to put Puckett in center field. That's like heresy.
Oh, I'm going to put Puckett in right. No question. Kirby was an all-time great.
So where are you going to put Oliva then?
Well, do I get a designated hitter?
Yes.
Okay, then he's my designated hitter.
Okay.
All right. So what I've got Puckett in right. I've got Byron Buxton in center field, and I've got Torrey Hunter in left field. Mm-hmm. So I'm taking three center fielders, but you know, come at me. At third base, I have Gary Gaetti.
Where are you going to put Killebrew?
At second base, I have Rod Carew. At first base, I have Harmon Killebrew. My catcher, I never got to see him play, but I know enough to say that Earl Batty is my catcher.
This guy hasn't watched baseball in Minnesota for a long time.
There's
a guy by the name of Joe Mauer out there that he's not going to
We could talk about this because I'm of the opinion that Joe Mauer, a fantastic catcher, overrated.
MVP.
Overrated.
Wow.
Yeah. Joe was a great ball player, but he did not reach his potential because he didn't have, in my opinion, the competitive fire to push himself he could have been Johnny Bench. And I didn't.
This is a guy who could have played big time basketball, big time football, and obviously was the best catcher the Twins ever had.
But he could have been better. And that's the thing, Steve. That's the thing that just sticks in my craw with Joe.
Okay. Left hand pitcher?
A lefty. Oh, left hand. Oh, give me Cott. Jim Cott.
You have Kitty Cott without question.
Absolutely.
Kitty Cott. Right hand pitcher.
Now, this is another controversial pick, but if you give me one Twins pitcher to win one game.
You're going to go Morris right now, but you can't go Morris over Blylevin.
I absolutely can. I'm going to take Jack Morris and that split finger fastball all day over Burt Blylevin.
Oh, man. Joe, straighten him out, would you?
Well, I only know 8 or 10 Twins players.
Okay, well then there must be the 8 or 10 top players all time.
Well, I know Killebrew and Carew. How long was Molitor with you guys? Wasn't he a DH?
He was probably only with us for maybe
four.
I was going to say 2 or 3.
Yeah,
great player, you know.
Right, right.
Without question, Hall of Fame. But you got to put him back in the Brewers.
Yeah, he's definitely a Brewer.
Yeah, he's a Brewer. Absolutely. Yeah.
Remember those days with Molitor and Yount in that infield?
Oh, my goodness, man. Yeah.
Wonderful teams. That 82 team.
Tell us about that 82 team for a second. Let's let Steve calm down here for a second.
I'm ready to come over the table at Rich when he wouldn't put Mauer in his catcher. What was the – I'm slipping right now, but well, the other one – oh, Blylevin.
Yeah.
Well, you guys have your World Series victories.
Yes, we do.
Was it 91?
Yep. 91, 87.
Okay, well, the Brewers don't have a World Series victory.
Right.
I think they were first a team in 1970. Of course, you would remember the Braves, Steve, before that. But the Brewers came to town in about 70.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, the Henry Aaron teams.
Yeah, Eddie Matthews, I remember
yes,
them all.
Yes, yes. So the Brewers have never won a World Series, but the 82 team went seven games with St. Louis before ultimately losing.
Because that's when the Brewers were in the American League.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. They moved to the NL in 98. Okay. Old American League team up until then. And that 82 team was the magical year.
Tell us. Okay. Give us that lineup.
You guys know I don't have any notes.
Yeah.
Cooper at first, Gantner at second, Robin Yount at short, Molitor at third, Ogilvie in left.
What an infield. Wow.
Oh, yeah. Think about that. Yeah. Phil Gantner.
Well, Simmons would be catching, or Yost, probably Simmons mostly. Ogilvie in left, Charlie Moore in right. Mark Brouhard, maybe. Center field would have been Gorman Thomas. And then Vukovich on the mound and McClure. And Sutton. You guys might remember Sutton.
Raleigh Fingers closing out those games.
Yeah, yeah. At the end of his career. You know, they have probably had 14 pitchers. That's about all I can do now. But
that's pretty good.
That was a and that
I
was old.
I can go back to the 94, in 54, 55, 56 Braves and name them all.
Can you really?
I think so.
Okay, let's go.
Oh, boy, I'm going to try it.
Well, were you a Braves? You had to be a Braves fan before a Twins fan.
It was on the radio. One of the only radio stations we could get at that time were the Braves. So we in at least eastern Minnesota here mostly listened to the Braves. Del Crandall, I think, was the catcher. Joe Adcock at first base. Johnny Logan at short. Eddie Matthews, of course, at third. You had Aaron. Billy Bruton and Covington, I think, running the outfield.
Is Hank Aaron the best right fielder of all time in your mind?
He's the best hitter. He's not the best right fielder. How can you not think of Roberto Clemente?
Exactly. Yeah. That was a loaded question.
Okay.
Yeah. And you passed the test, Steve. Well done. Okay. Roberto Clemente is the best right fielder of all time.
He ran. He was soft. He threw it on a dime.
He
threw it on a dime. An arm. He should have been a pitcher is what he should have been.
Right, right.
But, so let's go back, though, before we go on to the second part of my question.
Yes.
Rich sitting across from me, and I wish we had callers to substantiate my position, because there's no doubt it would have been Mauer and Blylevin as the catcher and the right-hand pitcher. Oh, we missed one, by the way, relief pitcher.
I got to take Rick Aguilera as my closer.
Aggie was good, but second.
Okay, in your mind?
Joe Nathan.
I love Joe Nathan. Aguilera, though, you know, both of those guys, like every save they ever had, two quick outs, give up a hit or a walk, and then get the third out. The difference in my mind is that Aguilera went to the World Series with the Twins.
That's true.
Yeah.
He did. He was there, but Nathan was awesome.
He was fantastic.
He was very, very good.
Yes, he was.
Hold on. You brought up a really interesting point. That is, you fell in love with a Braves team because that's who you could listen to.
Yeah.
When I was growing up in southern Wisconsin, farm country, we had the Brewers when I was a kid, but we also had the Cubs. Those were the teams we could listen to. So when we were dividing up teams in the Sandlot, the American League team was the Brewers and the National League team was the Cubs, because we identified with those teams that we could listen to on the radio. Yeah. You guys remember Harry Carey and
Jack Morehouse. How do you forget Harry Carey?
So those are the names we grew up with.
So you're making the point about baseball on the radio again.
Well, yes. And, well, did you have a team before you would have been, Twins would have been your team.
Twins showed up 8 years before I was born. So I'm a Twins fan, dyed in the wool.
Yeah.
I got you guys by a couple of decades.
Okay, but I really, Steve, I want to hear your all-time Twins team.
Oh, well, you hit most of them.
Okay.
But I would have gone like this. I'd have gone Puckett in center, because he's a center fielder.
Sure.
Hunter in left. I'd have moved Hunter to left.
Yep.
Oliva and Wright.
Okay.
Three, I think, without question, outfielders. Herbeck at first.
Mm-hmm.
Crew at second. Mauer catching. Cott, left-hand pitcher. Blylevin, right-handed pitcher. Joe Nathan. Killebrew at third. I had to put him at third, even though he didn't play there a lot, but I had to put him at third.
Right.
And shortstop would probably surprise you. Zoilo Versalles.
Well, and you know, I didn't give you a shortstop. I'm just realizing this just now. Oh. And I never got to see Zoilo play. Obviously, I mean, he was the 1965 MVP in a pretty important year for the Twins. That was the first year the Twins went to the World Series.
Yeah.
I have to say Greg Gagne.
Oh, Gagne, sure.
You know, defensively, without having seen Zoilo play, Greg Gagne is the best defensive shortstop this team has ever had. And he would hit enough to keep things interesting.
You're dating yourself as to your youth, your young age.
That is the nicest thing anyone will say to me all day long.
Those of us who are more chronologically gifted, Rich, we'll go with Versalles.
Okay.
So we agree on 6 or maybe 7 out of 10 positions.
Right, right.
No, 11 with the relief pitcher.
Yeah, exactly. So, Yeah, we can make that work, Steve.
Boy, over a beer, we'd have a knockdown drag.
I would love to do that, to have that Mauer conversation with you sometime.
Okay, absolutely. Now,
Steve, you played baseball. Oh,
yes, you did.
What position? At St. Olaf, wasn't it?
At Dundas, too. Okay. I played at Dundas.
So that would have been the home talent?
Yeah, we won a couple of state tournaments there at Dundas. Had some wonderful ball players. Not myself, but we had some wonderful ball players out of Dundas.
Who did you play with the Dukes?
Oh, the Olsen brothers,
yeah.
Lou and the late Jay, mm-hmm. Great players. Billy Nelson, Billy, great, great pitcher, lives out in Dundas. He was coach at the Carlton baseball team, College baseball team. Billy, great pitcher, very, very competitive. If you want to find somebody competitive, it was Billy Nelson.
Yeah, I don't doubt that.
I remember Billy also said, they're not going to hit the first pitch from me out of the park. So we always threw a curveball down and low, all the way. They were never going to hit the first one out. And there were Johnsons, there were Swiggums, the Fuchs brothers from Faribault. Jimmy and Dougie Fuchs, great, great ball players. So we had some pretty nice ball players in the Cannon Valley back at that
time.
What
position did you play?
A right field. So, okay, now you ready for just a touch of trivia?
I can do this.
I think this is true. I think.
Okay.
Now, at least it's close enough for government work.
Well, it's close enough. It's close enough for baseball talk.
Let me ask you guys something first.
Name me the two. You're going
to
ask something first?
No, I wanted to know if there should be an asterisk next to the World Series wins because of the ballpark the Twins played in.
No, no. Oh, are you kidding?
You tell can me stand so. Right up and walk right out of this studio.
Tell me
right
that's
now.
Not the worst park you've ever been in.
Metrodome was a terrible park, but you don't put an asterisk next to Joe Morris and Dan Gladden.
No, you don't.
Ken Herbeck.
I'm pulling your ears.
It was
from
a,
now on, it's just you and I.
Right, Steve. Exactly. We're just going to talk about Joe Mauer and how great he was. No, it was a god-awful ballpark.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, I remember more than one person smarter than me would say this is the best home field advantage probably in all of professional sports because the dome was the same color as the baseball, and so it was really tough to play defense in that. But you take advantage of your ballpark. Every team does that, and that's what we did.
I do remember how loud it would get in there.
It would get loud.
Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, some quick questions. First of all, I think this is true, by the way. So don't check on me, please. Somebody, one of the Kim radio listeners, please don't check.
There'll be a fact.
Give me the two. Now you're going to have to put your thinking caps on.
Okay.
The two northern latitude,
mm-hmm.
two northernmost cities that have hosted a World Series. The two northernmost cities that have hosted a World Series.
Minneapolis is one of them.
Minneapolis is correct. 87 and 91.
Has Seattle ever hosted a World Series?
No.
I don't think so.
No, they have not.
Milwaukee has. Detroit.
Montreal never did.
Detroit, Toronto.
Toronto's south of Minneapolis.
You guys are thinking too hard.
Oh, okay.
It's easier.
Boston?
No.
No?
Okay, can I give you some clues?
Oh, sure.
1965.
Okay, that's Los Angeles and Minnesota. 1965 World Series.
The cities were?
Los Angeles and Minneapolis.
Los Angeles and?
St. Paul?
No. Los Angeles and?
I don't know.
Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Bloomington.
Bloomington. Oh, okay.
The two northernmost cities.
So it's going to be Bloomington and Minneapolis.
Right, because Bloomington of course, was the home of the old Mets.
Sorry about that.
That's good. No, that's good.
you tried to make it a little harder than it is.
All right.
You've already talked about the two World Series in 87 and in 91.
How many people were trying to dial their phone numbers?
There were people screaming Bloomington at their radios right there.
Okay, give me the 1987 World Series MVP.
The World Series MVP of 1987 was Frank Viola.
And his nickname is?
Sweet Music.
Sweet Music. You have it. Okay. How about 1991 MVP?
I'll tell you who the MVP was and who it should have been. It was my great hero, Jack Morris.
You got it.
It should have been Kirby.
Boy. Yeah. And you're leading me both into further questions.
Okay.
But yes, it was Jack Morris.
Yes.
Didn't he pitch the first and the seventh, right?
Well, I think he pitched I want to say he pitched game four, too, and that one didn't go as well. But Morris, just on game seven of 1991, won that World Series MVP, which was one of the best pitch games in history.
Yeah. What was the first year that the World Series was played indoors?
I think I know this, but I'll let Joe take a crack at it first.
We've talked about it a little
1987.
Bit.
87. Yeah.
87 was the first time it was played.
I was just trying to scan the various stadiums that have domes, right? Yeah.
And what year, Rich, what year, since you're getting all the answers.
Sorry, man.
What year did the Minnesota Twins come to Minnesota?
1961.
61.
Who did they play in that first game?
Oh, first game. I'm going to say they played the White Sox.
They played the New York Yankees.
The Yankees.
It was Roger Maris's first game of 1961 when he would go on.
Did he hit one out?
I don't think so.
Because wasn't that the year, 61,
that year.
He and Maris and Mantle went to 59, 60, 61?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that if Mickey had stayed healthy, he might have actually outperformed Maris that season. But yeah, that was that. I don't know if he hit one or not, but that was Maris's first game of the fabled 1961 season.
Okay.
And it happened in Bloomington.
So they would have played in Bloomington from 61 till about, when was 80? When did the Metrodome
come? The Metrodome opened in 82.
Okay.
So 61 to 81, they played in, at the Met.
I will say this.
And guys, I voted for that too. That's how old I am. I voted for the Metronome.
For the folks who are listening, before we started talking with Corey Provis on the air, Steve took all the credit for getting a Target Field built. And so I just want to say thank you, Mr. Swigum, for that.
No, I take no credit, but I was Speaker of the Year. But
yeah, you voted for it, right?
Yes.
And you made sure that vote happened, right?
Yes.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Swigum.
I'll say this. I'm glad.
I went to the House floor with the votes.
Okay.
You got it. When you go to the floor, you got to have the votes.
My man. All right.
I'm glad they're playing baseball outside.
Yes. Yes. I
think the football team should have put a retractable dome on for those September and October wonderful Minnesota fall days.
They could have done it too.
Yeah, I'm really glad they're playing baseball outside.
1991 World Series, won in the seventh game, which, as you talked about, Jack Morris.
Mm-hmm.
But who was the hitter? Who was the batter who hit the single to win the game?
I know this.
I only know a few games. I'm going to say Puckett.
It was Gene Larkin.
Okay. All
right. Who scored the winning run?
Gene Larkin. Dan Gladden.
Dan Gladden. Exactly right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So are you ready for now the second part of the question is your two most memorable Minnesota Twin times. What moments?
Can Joe have two Brewer?
He can have two Brewer moments.
Okay.
Two Brewer moments.
We've got to remind the audience that I've got the old baseball glove logo baseball cap for the Milwaukee Brewers. Yeah.
So I'm guessing at Kim here in southeastern Minnesota. Mm-hmm. We have a couple of Brewers fans.
Yeah, I think that's okay.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, we go. So what are your favorite moments from the Brewers?
Certainly the 82 team,
yeah.
The World Series team. That was a real thrill for us kids growing up to see the Brewers play St. Louis in that. And you know what? I believe the Brewers won the first game 10-0,
mm-hmm.
and then lost the series in seven games, but. that was certainly a thrill. The thrill for me, though, growing up was really the broadcast. I mean, it was really neat to talk to Corey today. He was a part of Brewers history as an announcer. But we had guys like Bob Uecker and Merle Harmon and Pat Hughes, who's now with the Cubs. So a lot of the special moments were me and my friends after playing games ourselves listening to the Brewers at night around the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Rich, your two favorite moments.
Well, first of all, I feel like I have to explain myself to you, Steve, because in 1987, I was both a senior in high school and a freshman at St. Olaf College. And that baseball season, I was too self-involved to pay enough attention to the Twins to really enjoy the full championship season, right? So for me, my favorite Twins team is the 91 team. And so my best memory is Jack Morris in Game 7 of the 91 series. That I will never forget hanging on every single pitch, and he just made pitch after pitch after pitch. And the way his defense would play behind him when he would actually give up, actually put something in play even. Morris, was the best I've ever
Memorable moment.
Yeah, exactly.
How would let me follow up on your first memorable moment.
Yes.
How would you have liked to have been manager Tom Kelly walking out to that mound in the 10th inning with Jack Morris on the mound?
No. No, thank you.
I'm sure that conversation was short. I'm sure it didn't go well.
Yep.
I'm sure it didn't go well very well. And I don't know that this be true, but I think I remember Jack Morris just turning his back to him and saying, get the hell out of here.
Get off my mound. Yes, that was it. Now, my second is, this is a very personal story, because it doesn't have to do actually to do with a game. But I used to work for the Twins. And there was a year, long time ago, we were still in the Dome, Twins Fest. We were finishing up Twins Fest that year. And part of my job was to take care of all the computer equipment and get it all back up to the ticket office. There was an elevator, a legendary elevator in the Metrodome. Steve, you might know a little bit about this. That was just slower than molasses in January. It was just awful. And but you had to use it for the big heavy equipment. But you never, if the door was going to close while you were trying to get down this long hallway, you had to scream at people, "Hey, hold the door." Mm-hmm. All right, so I've got all my equipment in the elevator, and the door is closing, and I hear, hold the door, and I stop, and I let whoever's coming in, and it's three kids and Harmon Killebrew. And I'd had a couple interactions with Mr. Killebrew, but nothing memorable. And he looked at me and said, "Thanks, Rich." That was it. That's as good as it gets, right? Harmon Killebrew knew my name. That was as good as it got right there.
As you guys probably know, at the legislature, we would open up every session with a prayer.
Mm-hmm.
We'd open up with a prayer. So opening season might have been 2003. It might have been 2004. I had both Killebrew and Kirby.
Oh, wow.
To the Capitol, up at the podium, to say the opening prayer of the day. It was pretty neat, pretty special.
Very cool.
So, Rich, I agree with you with the one Jack Morris memorable moment.
Mm-hmm.
But the other memorable one I'm going to bring up for you, against part of Minnesota memory, and I'm sure every baseball fan in the state remembers this, Game 6 of the 1991 World Series.
Yeah.
And the bottom of the ninth, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Bottom of the ninth. Yep. Kirby hits one out to deep left center. It's gone. It's gone. Who's the national broadcaster?
And what does he say?
Joel or Jack?
Jack Buck.
Right? It was Jack Buck. And what was his line?
"And we'll see you tomorrow night."
I didn't even know
that one. That's all he said. That's all he said. Nothing else.
The nine best words in baseball. "We'll see you tomorrow night."
Yeah.
Yep. Guys, I don't know about the listeners, but I've enjoyed the heck out of this last hour.
Well, I think really we should thank the Kim listeners for letting us do this.
Indulging us. This has been really fun.
For the Brewer fan, am I right? For the wrong place Twins fan, it's across from me.
You and I are going to have a couple of beers this summer. We're going to talk about this, Steve. All right, folks. Thank you so much for joining us today. Next week on Public Policy This Week, we'll get back to the important and serious stuff. But for, until then, enjoy the rest of your beautiful Friday and have a superb weekend. Take care.
You've been listening to Public Policy This Week. Tune in every Friday morning at 10 a.m. for more conversation with policy experts. Remember, this show can be found on your favorite podcast platform or stream it from kymnradio.net.